I did really want to thank everyone for being here. This is actually a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. I was trained at UC Berkeley as a community health planner when they were still doing that, and actually worked in an HSA before it became unfunded, and worked as a legislative planner for the city and county of San Francisco, and have been at Kaiser Permanente for quite some time. So it really feels to me as though it's coming full circle, and I really do appreciate all of the work of everyone on the panel. And this is an opportunity for me to talk a bit about the work that we're doing in Kaiser Permanente. Quick show of hands, who here lives in a state or a community where there is a Kaiser Permanente that serves? Great, so we're not too foreign to you. I'll talk just briefly. Let me see how I do this here. There we go. This is an opportunity to, we started sort of the high level, and I'm going to talk to you about how we, as an integrated, not-for-profit healthcare delivery system, are going about doing this work, and how we're really the same and similar to many other institutions, and how we are pretty, unique in many ways. So the mission of Kaiser Permanente is, as you see, it's kind of twofold. It is to provide high quality, affordable health care and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. And it's always had a focus on both the health of our members as well as the health of our communities. And we in Community Benefit have a particular vision that we will be able to play this leading role in addressing the needs, with a particular focus on people who are low income and underserved, with the ultimate vision being that all people live in healthy, vibrant communities with access to quality care. So this is a quick snapshot. I myself am based in Northern California, but I'm doing work across the whole program on community health needs assessment. So we have 8 regions, but nearly 9 million members currently, and about 36 hospitals, of which Northern California has about 3.3, 3.4 million members and 21 hospitals. Someone else asked, where are the rest of the hospitals? Which is a good question. Southern California has the majority of the rest of the hospitals in our system, and then Hawaii and the Northwest region, Portland, each have 1 or 2. So you can see that the most of the hospitals are really based in California. So I thought I could talk a bit what our approach has been to the implementation of the requirements that Julie did such a great job of describing. And for Kaiser Permanente, it really is an opportunity to do exactly what Julie said. It is a regulatory requirement, we're aware of that, but we don't take this as something to check off the box. This really builds on decades, actually, of deep-rooted commitment to the health of the population and to community health improvement. And in California, we've actually had legislative requirements since the mid-90s, that was SB 697, to conduct needs assessments. And we can talk a little bit about how it's similar and how it does differ from these new requirements. We have a very deep and long-standing commitment to community benefit within the organization, and there is a breadth of the portfolio that we'll talk a bit more about, but it includes direct care, it includes training programs, research, partnerships with the collaboratives in our communities, as well as contributions. So we have a lot of assets that we really draw on across the organization to make a difference in the health of our communities. And we are unique in being both a multi-hospital system and also an integrated system. And we'll talk a bit about how that plays out with some of these requirements. So this is, it was very exciting to get to hear from Dr. McGinnis earlier. This is an image that we've been using inside of our organization to talk about the Fogey-McGinnis work. People can quibble about the percentages, but what this is about is showing exactly, as we had earlier discussed and as we in public health know, that what causes health, actually, medical care is the smallest percentage. And this also, Dr. Blum, who was my teacher at the School of Public Health, had a really great image. He called the force field of the football. We know what makes people healthy is much more the environment, social factors, people's behaviors in the context of the environment, and also, as was described, family history and genes. Okay, so what is this rather busy? It's going to be simplified by the time it gets really rolled out. So we take our understanding of what causes health, and we take the requirements of the needs assessment in ACA, and this reflects a kind of busy image of the way we're thinking in our organization about how to go through this process. And the first bucket, which you probably can't read all that well, but it's in the dark blue on top, is we've been working with the University of Missouri, the CARES Institute, and their IP3, who also power the Community Commons, which Julie talked about. And we're very excited that we've been able to work with them very hard and are just rolling out to our own facilities and our communities a web-based platform. We're also excited that we think this will be able to be used and really expanded upon by a national group that Julie's involved with and the CDC is very heavily involved with, and we can talk more about that later. This is specific right now to our work. So we've got this platform, yay, took a lot of work, and in it, we'll be talking, we have identified a list of common indicators that I'll talk a bit more about. And this is a way, as Stephanie was talking, the whole world's changed, right? We don't have to pull up documents and Xerox them anymore. We can reach into these publicly available systems, which have their flaws, but they also have a lot of strengths. So within the context of this database, this platform, we'll be able to look at the demographics of our communities. We'll be able to look at something I'll talk about in a little bit, what we've defined as the key drivers of health, which to us are poverty, whether or not your educational status, whether you've attained a high school diploma, and whether you're insured. And we'll be able to look at that on a very granular level geographically, and you'll be able to have maps to show within your community where there are particular pockets of need as evidenced by those drivers. Then you can pull back a bit and look at morbidity and mortality across many other indicators, and then pull back a bit further to look at what are some of the drivers of the health, such as social and economic behaviors, factors, health behaviors, the physical environment, and clinical care. With all of this, you'll be able to compare it against benchmarks, and we had hoped to be able to use Healthy People 2020, and we can talk some more about some challenges with those indicators. So where they are available for these data, then that is those benchmarks will be there. Where that isn't available, we'll be comparing it against county, state, and national benchmarks. This will create a report that our facilities and our collaborators will be able to use, which is an important but not a complete part of this process, as Julie was describing. Then we'll be looking at identifying community assets and resources and other secondary data. Many of our health departments just have been incredible partners and have done fabulous work over the years and have very rich sources of data, which are not necessarily yet available to be put into the website. We will also be conducting primary data collection through such techniques as Stephanie was describing, surveys and focus groups and key input from public health leaders and others. And this will then lead us to what is the first part of the process. We think there are three different requirements as we interpret ACA. The first is this data interpretive process to identify all the needs in the community. And then you have to go through the process that Julie was describing the prioritized list of needs. I will say the statute or the regs are a little confusing to me. The word prioritized and all is just hard for me to wrap my mind around. And I'm not alone, I don't think. Therefore, so what you see at the very bottom is the Community Health Needs Assessment Report, which does need to be made publicly available on websites. It can be done collaboratively. All of the steps can be done collaboratively or can be done by individual facilities. But then we have to keep going and kind of rounding the curve, and we have to make a selection process applying other criteria for which needs we will focus on and which needs we will not be able to focus on and why. And as part of that, we have to bring into this conversation what we know about evidence-based and promising practices, our own resources. We're hopeful that we might be able to look at KP member data, which would be very exciting for those places where we have a significant number of members in a community. And then we've got to develop the implementation strategy, and then we have to measure all of it. So you can see that this is a very exciting, but frankly rather daunting for many of our facilities to be able to do this in the time period that's required. So I'll just briefly touch on some of the other tools that we've been developing. In order to have this web-based platform, we realized that we have historically let each of our facilities, it's been kind of let a thousand flowers bloom, and each of our facilities have developed whatever indicators they wanted in collaboration with the communities, and that was great, but we didn't have any consistency, and we weren't able to roll up and look at the needs across our facilities. So we have identified this list of about 86 common indicators, and when we looked at the different ways to think about bucketing or the indicators, we really loved the work that was done by the county rankings, by the people at University of Wisconsin. And so we think the categories make a lot of sense, and that's what we've relied upon, but we have added quite a few indicators to that, which we'll talk about. So we've got these core indicators, and all of our regions are looking at core or the key drivers, and then we've got the common indicators in the middle, which are about 86. And then there's a rich array of other resources. And in the web-based platform that we're working on with CARES, they have 7,000 additional data layers, which is very exciting and daunting to think about how to pull all these in and make sense of them. The key drivers that I mentioned, I don't think this one is rocket science, but I'm actually very excited that our organization has adopted the idea of thinking about what makes people healthy. And I don't think for a public health community this is going to be surprising. I think it will be very exciting for us to be able to look within our larger communities for areas of particular need. And we imagine with the mapping that we'll have, we will be able to look at an association with other health needs. So we did use the match ways of categorizing with some tweaks. So we did add demographics. They acknowledged, of course, they have demographics, but they didn't break it out. We're also making sure as much as possible to have as much information, not just about total population and age and gender, but also race and ethnicity. And there are some real challenges with a lot of the data sets and not having very good information on that. Then social economic factors, health behavior, physical environment. We looked at what they called quality. To us, really seemed to be clinical care for lots of reasons. It was self-reported, it was birth data. And last, the health outcomes of morbidity and mortality. And there are lots of different ways, of course, to think about using these categories so that they're not static. And we have then grouped these indicators in our platform by health need, and then tried to group or bucket the health behaviors, the physical environment, et cetera, as contributing to the specific health need. So this is a snapshot of what the website looked like a few weeks ago. It's entirely transformed because we've been working on it very actively. But it will allow our facilities and our community partners to select the geographic area that they want to be focusing on. Initially, it's pre-populated with our own service areas for our hospitals. But shortly, the CARES folks will be able to allow people to draw their own geography, to select the indicators they want to focus on, look at the data report, and then do a lot of work with mapping as well as tables. I'll take a breath and just go into the prioritization process, which is what we're thinking about now. And I really think Julie really hit it. This is a complicated one, I think. We think it's nice that there are opportunities for greater transparency and the ability to work with community partners, which we think is essential. But each facility, you know, the need, our tax exemption will rise and fall on each, in particular, each facility's submission of this work. So that's a balance that we have to really draw on. We think we have some ideas about how to move through these processes, which are both rather prescriptive as well as rather vague. And so we think that we'll be spending more time not pulling the data, but interpreting the data. And we're beginning to really focus on what criteria would you use for these three different stages of the process. The identification of the need, which we think is this first one, and then the prioritization of the need, again, all, and then the actual selection of the health need. And it seems to us that you might use some of the same criteria in each of those steps, but probably you would also want to have some specific criteria that are different based upon the different steps and also who's involved in these conversations. So, yeah, there are pros and cons. There are challenges and there are great opportunities to these requirements. I have to say the interpretation and the implementation of these new regulations in the time period is challenging, and trying to figure out how this relates to existing statutory requirements, such as in the state of California. The data is very hard. It's hard to get data that is timely and that is available and as granular a level as you really need it to be. I honestly think there's a huge implication for the need for the kind of incredibly great data that we have in the state of California through the California Health Interview Survey. The data is problematic. These processes, as Julie was mentioning, the timelines and how to align different hospitals who have different timelines, similarly with different health departments. In the city and county of San Francisco alone, I know of three brand new needs assessment processes that are happening simultaneously. One for CTG, one for the accreditation of the health department, and one for all the hospitals involved in the needs assessment. They're going to figure out something brilliant, and they're working together, but it's complicated. And then the last challenge, I would say, is really how to identify the evidence-informed interventions that make sense to people locally. But I think you can tell that we think there are many opportunities here, and for us, we have the ability to look systematically in a way we haven't. Across the different geographic areas and across Kaiser Permanente regions, We're very excited, as you can tell, by these new tools that we're creating, and we are really enjoying the opportunity to work collaboratively with many different partners. I think I got the data. The data's challenging. We're having a hard time needing to, but the small area estimates, data that's only available on a county level. Currently in the website, we have data that's available specific to California, given our presence in California, and then there's information that's available nationally. And much of the time it's comparable, but there are a few indicators where it's not exactly comparable. Big problem with subgroup data being rich enough to be able to really hone in on disparities, and this is something that actually our public health departments, particularly in the Bay Area, have done a fabulous job of over time. So I think there are many opportunities for collaboration on health disparities and identifying those through data. Well, here we are. That really has been something that I think that public health has a great deal to be sharing with the community at large. We think that this will allow us, once we kind of move through this rather intensive planning process, it will allow us to have meaningful conversations. Those do take time, as Stephanie pointed out, to identify the needs and the assets and to think really deeply about what makes a community healthy and where hospitals and other healthcare providers fit within that. We are working hard and we are sharing as much as we can, which actually the Catholic Hospital Association has always done. And so we will be sharing these tools as we develop them, and we are very interested in people's feedback so we can keep refining. So that kind of busy, soon to be simplified process map is one. Our key indicators we're happy to share with others. The data platform itself, and particularly working to share it in a way that makes sense nationally, not so much for our service areas. And then we are preparing a series of toolkits to help our facilities and collaboratives work through the different aspects of the process. So, that's one of the folks that we work with in Northern California through our community benefit. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So there you have it, a truly amazing panel. Mike, Stephanie, Julie, and Jean all brought a different perspective to how we are all in it together. And so I really think it's just a tremendous amount of material here to digest. As I was listening to the speakers, I was reflecting on the fact that I was sitting amongst the thought leaders. And you know what? Even though a couple of thought leaders have roots in Maryland, and Mike actually lives in Maryland, I'm going to be honest and say we're not seeing that kind of practice. And I'm not just calling out hospitals, I'm calling out health departments too. We're not seeing that kind of practice across the state of Maryland, because the kinds of best practices that you've heard about here really haven't taken root yet. And I suspect that might be the case for some of you.